Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be around the globe, in the chat room, maybe you're on some phone apps, wherever you are, thank you so much for tuning in, because believe me, some nights we go through a lot of trouble to bring this show to you. I am Michael Vera, and this is Late Night in the Midlands, and it has been one of those freaking nights, I'll tell you. I was ahead of the game. Like, well, great. I'm actually going to have some time for myself. Everything done. And, oh, I don't know, an hour and a half before the show, it's, oh, I didn't realize I was scheduled with you. I'll get into that in a moment. So tonight's guest has been switched up here. We've got John DiNardo joining us tonight. We're going to discuss the shootings. We're going to discuss Planet X. We're going to discuss a lot of things, and there is some actual new news on that too, so we'll get to that. So that's what we're doing tonight, and I got some news I want to share with you, but first I want to give you a theory of mine. You know, I was tipped off by somebody last week, contact in the desert that went on, great conference, a lot of great speakers were at it. And somebody had told me that, a certain person there had warned others to not come on the show. Now, I laughed about it then because, I believe it, because I've had past guests of mine. I've said this before, but there's a reason I'm getting into this tonight, because I'm a little upset with it all. A little bit, not much. But I've had guests come to me and tell me that they have been told by George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM and Lisa Lyon, told by them that they not to mention me, for one. And another, some of them have been, told that if they came on my show that they wouldn't be allowed to come back on Coast to Coast. I'm not kidding you. This is real. And so now I'm beginning to wonder, because, we had in the last couple weeks, last few weeks, I had a week off, but we've had, five different guests from that conference who have, for one reason or another, not kept up with the scheduled show that they had with us. And I find that a little strange. I don't know about you. And there's a couple of them who have done it twice now. Twice, asked to be rescheduled and then booted out again. So this is, I'll tell you, I have a good reputation, not only for bringing on some of the more popular guests, but of bringing on guests who nobody's heard of. I think I'd like to go back to that route and bring a lot more of them on, because they seem to take it a little more serious than those who are selling the books and selling subscriptions to this or that. Honestly, it's a little irritating. If you are easily influenced, if somebody tells you, don't go on that show or you're not coming on mine, there's only one reason you wouldn't, want to lose your chance to go on Coast, and that's because you're selling something and you're hitting a wide audience to sell to. And so if the almighty dollar is more important to some of you than getting to the truth, then I just assume not have you on my show. And some of you, I've started my blacklist. Some of them, I'm just blacklisting them right out. One day when, they're not around no more and you have to come to shows like this, my door is going to be closed on you. And so, burning bridges isn't usually a good idea. I don't care. I'll sit here and I'll talk for 3 hours by myself if I have to. I mean, I know just as much as most of them. I just don't overtalk them to, show, oh, look how smart I am. I don't do that. So anyways, I wanted to get that out there. And I'll say this, Coast, if you want war, then fine. Okay. Then we'll do that. Anyways, let's move along here. I do have some news that I'd like to get into, and we're going to do that in just a moment. I started a few minutes late also, because not only did the guest cancel, then my board decides that today's not a good day to load anything up. Yeah, it decided that for me. And I'm going crazy here. Finally, I still didn't get to load everything I wanted to, but that's okay. We'll get around it because I'm not going to let anything stop me from having a good show tonight. I'm not going to do it. Yeah, I'm just not going to do it. All right. So U.S. confirms it will place 250 tanks in Eastern Europe to counter Russian threat. They say there's a list of different places, including Bulgaria and Romania and Poland, that will host equipment, says Ash Carter, the U.S. Defense Secretary. The United States will place 250 tanks, artillery pieces, and fighting vehicles in seven Eastern Europe European countries as a bulwark against Russian aggression. It was confirmed on Tuesday. So I know, again, may I say it, or just a conspiracy theory. I noticed Alex Jones put a little video out there today talking about his sources have just told him that the Russians are going to have an attack on the U.S. and World War III is coming. I have news for you, Alex. My hat's off to the guy. He's done a lot, but I've been saying for probably the last year now that World War III had already started. I promise you, it has. People think I'm, just saying it because it sounds cool, right? But I'm not. It's really happening. So the U.S. is strategically placing their artillery and their tanks around Russia, and don't think for a minute Russia's not going to do it to us. And I'm telling you, World War III just hasn't come to your doorstep yet, but it's here. It's here. I know. I'm just a fearmonger. That's all I am. Ash Carter, the U.S. Defense Secretary, said that these different countries surrounding Russia will host equipment in order to reassure NATO countries alarmed by Russian action in the Ukraine. So there it is. Now, some are saying that United States soldiers are already trading fire with Russian soldiers in the Ukraine, but I have not been able to confirm anything like that, although it's possible. So there you have it. Controversial, heavily censored planetary system just revealed to public for the first time. We're going to be talking about this very object tonight. And I see here, and this came from the Intel Hub. And while I don't, go for everything they put out over there, this I haven't checked into this yet, but I'm certainly gonna. Story here, it says, for years, it has been speculated by conspiracy theorists and some astronomers that Google Sky, you remember good old Google Sky and that big old spot in space that was squared out? There's like a black patch on it. Well, it had been censoring what's known as Planet X or Nibiru, a lot of people have said, from the general public's view online. That's what most people thought. And I even thought it was awful suspicious, right? So now, shockingly, a massive swath of Google Sky that had been previously blacked out, censored, some may say, had been made visible by Google for your viewing pleasure. The image below, and this is in the article, so if you go over to News and Discoveries, you'll see the images. They're right there in the article. The system is censored by Google for years, and they show a picture of this system. So what it is, I don't know, could be. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert there. I've actually got to put my nose in it and research it a little bit and see what's what out that way. But as of now, it's currently unknown why Google has now unrestricted, that is, access to the planetary system, which was the focus of the late Zachariah Sitchin, who wrote numerous publications on the planet Nibiru. In the image that was shot in 2015, it says you can clearly see the winged disc as described by Sitchin and others. It's almost uncanny. The system is currently located at, and there is coordinates here, so if you want to go to the article, excuse me, go to the article, and right there you'll have the coordinates. You could go copy them and paste them in wherever, Google Sky or what have you, and look for yourself. As they say, although we can't say for sure that it's Nibiru, and I respect them for doing that because you can't, it sure does match all descriptions. And yeah, it kind of does. I will say this, though. I've looked at plenty of planets through, like, now different cameras and different lenses and things. And sometimes, you know, they do look like they have wings. But this does resemble. I mean, it's orange. It resembles the whole Nibiru thing. So, and if that's not enough, who knows? This might even help your belief a little bit, because we had a huge solar storm that hit Earth. And they say the power grid and GPS could be disrupted by auroras that may be seen pretty much everywhere. The Earth is being battered, they say, by a huge solar storm, which could disrupt the power grid, GPS systems, as well as letting people see beautiful auroras. A potent blast of magnetic plasma shot out of the sun on Sunday, traveling faster than usual. So it was in a hurry. According to the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that's right, the NOAA, good old NOAA, it brought with it, they say, the biggest solar storm at least since March, and perhaps since September of 2005, and it's probably bigger than that, and they just aren't telling us. But I don't know, what's ticking the sun off? Any ideas? Any suggestions out there? All right, folks, well, we're going to take a break. I am Michael Vera. This is Late Night in the Midlands. When we come back, we'll have John DiNardo, and I welcome you all to call in if you've got questions or things you want to add. You want to even talk about that couple of those stories I just went over? You're more than welcome to call in after the break. So the number, by the way, is located on our website. I want to give a shout out to our radio affiliates, the Dark Matter Radio Network. Hello to every one of you listening there. Of course, all listening on K98 Talk, High Point Radio, the top of New Jersey. They cover New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And they do it on 100.5 FM and 1700 AM. And we appreciate all that they do of getting Late Night in the Midlands out there to the masses, to people who might not otherwise have heard us. So we appreciate that, all of them. And, of course, the LNM Radio Network, we're just kicking tail over here on LNM. We've got some great shows, and you're listening to one of them right now. So we'll be back in just a moment. Again, this is Late Night in the Midlands. Well, that may be true. I don't know so much as though it will be the end of the world as much as it may be the end of you and me. I'm Michael Vera. This is Late Night in the Midlands, and we're ready to get things rock and rolling here a little bit. The website's www.latenightinthemidlands.com. That is our mothership here for the L&M Radio Network. So please go on over, become a member, subscribe. You get access to all our archives, and you know, we appreciate it because it keeps us on the air, helps us, and we keep it real. So we give you, well, they're the alternative to us. How's that? All right. So John DiNardo earned his degree in science education from Keene University with electives in physics and biology, and he taught high school physics before returning to an electronics career during his 4.5 years in the Marine Corps. So, you know, this isn't just some fly-by-night, folks. He graduated from the Naval Air Technical Training Center in Memphis, Tennessee, as a Scholastic Honor Man in the Aviation Electronics Technician School. He also completed evening college courses in electrical engineering and in advanced mathematics, differential equations, at Fairleigh Dickinson University. Additionally, he performed troubleshooting, fault analysis, and design of electronic circuitry, Working for numerous corporations, John has done extensive research in the field of physics, and is doing so has helped him in his research of Planet X, which is one of the main topics we will be discussing tonight, and we're looking forward to hearing from all of you. And, you know, some of you might say, oh, why are we talking about Planet X again? And, you know, well, why are we talking about it? Because there's new stuff coming out. You got Google opening up the sky now. Is this their way of getting right with God, maybe? I don't know. They're saying, hey, look, Lord, we told everybody now. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. You know, it's worth talking about. It's worth talking about. Because how bad would it be if we didn't talk about it and then it happened? And the survivors would sit around the campfire saying, that SOB, we used to listen to that show. You never told us about any of this. We had no idea. So, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry. So tonight, we will be speaking with John DiNardo. And it should be a real interesting conversation. Always is with John, and I'm going to bring him on with us now. So let's do it. And I'm willing to bet John's got a good connection tonight.
Hello.
Good evening, John DiNardo. It is a pleasure to have you on the show, and your connection sounds great tonight.
Well, hi, Michael. I'm glad to be with you and your audience.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you here, and I think it's a good night, too, because I'm noticing there's some, new information coming out about this whole Planet X thing. A little bit, anyways. I noticed where Intel Hub had reported that Google has now taken their little curtain down. You know how they had a section of space squared off? Well, apparently that's down now, and it's there for all people to view, I guess.
Well, tell me more about this new information on Planet X. I haven't heard about it yet.
Well, that's what I'm telling you right now, is that they're saying that now that Google has unmasked that space, you remember that black patch?
I wasn't familiar with that. How does that relate to information about Planet X?
Well, it's now down, and Intel Hub is saying that it's possible that now what you're seeing, it looks pretty much like what everybody's described you'd see. So is it Planet X? I don't know. But it's something new to look at anyhow.
Well, you know, and just as we all know, Michael, the ruling elite feel a sick moral responsibility to foretell their future plans, or the future events, actually. This would not be related to their plans, but it would be a future event that they may want to, in their perverted way, reveal to us about their knowledge through our space telescopes, their knowledge of this incoming dwarf star, which NASA itself has called Planet X in their internal documents going back over a third of a century ago. NASA published a document titled The Search for Planet X by Dr. Robert S. Harrington. Incidentally, many researchers believe that Dr. Harrington was murdered when he was about to reveal his findings. Through his telescopic survey of the sky and his extensive computer calculations to determine which small section of the sky this object was coming in from, he then went to, or dispatched, a telescope of his own design to the Black Birch Observatory in New Zealand, which was one of the observatories of the U.S. Naval, of his U.S. Naval Observatory based in Washington, D.C. And they did these telescopic several nights pictures were taken, and in which the telescope is fixed on the ground, kept in the same position, and a photograph of that particular object or that particular section of the sky is made each night at about the same time. 24 hours apart, several nights. And what they do is, this is a procedure that was originated by the great astronomer back in 1910 when he discovered Pluto, Clyde Tombaugh, at the Lowell Observatory in Arizona. And what it's called is called blink comparison, whereby they take photographs on several nights of the sky, and the sky is just loaded with stars. So the photograph, you would never be able to detect one particular object out of all those millions of stars in the photograph. But what you do is illuminate each photograph from each successive night. You overlay the photographic plates, make them transparent plates, transparencies like negatives, more or less, and you shine light through selectively through each of the plates only, so that only one plate is illuminated, and the light is cycled repetitively through each of the plates rapidly enough so that the human eye can see the one object that has moved amidst all the other stars that have not moved.
I see.
So you see, what you'll see is a whole field. With this blink comparison, you'll see the rapid change in illumination of each of the different photographic plates. And the human eye can see a fixed field through this rapid succession of illuminations. And if there's one object that has moved from one night to the next, then that one object will stand out. It's a brilliant way of detecting an object which is close enough to be moving amidst all the stars, which are so far away that they just, there's no movement at all, and they're all fixed in fixed stars, just as our sun is a fixed star.
Well, you know, John, what I would like, if when you get a chance, maybe on one of our breaks or maybe tomorrow or whenever you get a chance, is to go over to my website, and I have this article linked up, and it's short, and it has some pictures from it, and it also has the coordinates where you can go look and see this area that Google has now allowed everybody to see. I'd love for you to take a look at it and tell me what you think, because you certainly know better than I do.
Yeah, I would certainly want to do that. I'll take a look at it, and also there are people who are, I'm not an astronomer, I mean, I'm just schooled in physics and biology, and I took astronomy in college and began to study astronomy more intently about 13 years ago when I found out about Planet X. So I do know something about astronomy, but as far as sighting in on objects, I have some friends and contacts who can do that, help out to try to determine if, you know, the veracity or the accuracy of this particular sighting or these coordinates that you're talking about. There's one guy in particular named Gilbert Erickson. I could check with him. He may have some idea about that. But, you know, like Dr. Harrington, as I mentioned before, he died very suddenly of what is often used, a disease which or a symptom, a sickness, which is often attributed to people who seem to be in the way or dispensable or people who the ruling elite want to get rid of. And that sickness is rapid onset cancer. They have a way of inducing cancer in people. That's what happened to Dr. Harrington back in January of 91, I believe. I think I'm accurate with that year, but it was in January. It was really a few months after he was supposed to announce to the world his findings of his blink comparison photographs, telescopic photographs of the sky that I just described to you. And he had previously announced before his expedition to New Zealand to take these photographs of the sky, he had announced that he was going to reveal the findings when they were prepared, which would have been somewhere late in 1990 or 1991, one or the other. Well, what happened was the findings were never revealed. Nothing was ever said about it. Dr. Harrington died suddenly within a matter of a couple weeks. And in fact, NASA never did even mention anything about the examination of the photographic plates and what they determined. The subject was totally buried. So there is a very clear indication of a cover-up, and very shines, casts a light of suspicion on the people in the power elite in our government who control NASA for the possible murder of Dr. Harrington, Dr. Robert S. Harrington.
And there's been many who have been knocked off. Well, according to some, there's been many that have been knocked off because of this. Dr. Harrington being one of them. But you know, we're noticing now with the Jade Helm and the attempts to get racial riots going in the country and all these things. The Russia and China and the U.S. It seems like things are starting to head off, and I gotta wonder: are they doing this because they know something, or are they doing this because they know something?
Well, you're right. Everybody who's been following deep politics, not the lies that we get in the mainstream media, but everybody who's been following deep politics, and it includes some of this information is really covered by highly credible sources such as the Daily Mail, the London Daily Mail in England, and other newspapers and highly credible reporters on the internet and on radio too. They're talking about all these events, all these scary events that you're referring to, like Jade Helm, would be a way for the government to clamp down militarily on the public and institute martial law because they know that food riots would break out. There would be riots as a result of taking away the people's money in the banks. Overnight, the banks will it's very likely that the banks will close their doors and tell people, well, we don't have your money. What are you going to do about it? This has happened in Argentina, I believe, in the year 2000, fairly recently. And there's a guy named Fernando Aguirre. I should really follow up later on when the show is over and maybe tomorrow send you his contact information. But he's on the internet. If you go to YouTube and look up, what is it? I keep trying to remember. Urban Survival, it might be. Survival. Just type that into YouTube. This guy is a very well, very articulate, speaks English very well, Argentinian, and he talks about exactly what we're warning of right now, that the banks will close their doors. That's what they did in Argentina, and naturally, the people with thousands of dollars deposited in the banks are going to riot, and the police will be blocking the people, and they'll have to have troops out there to stop the riot. So that's what Jade Helm would probably be all about. And also food. Now, this is another thing. Before we even get into Planet X, there's so many ramifications of this whole series of events that are going on right now. There are researchers now I'm in contact with or believe, and I think Deborah Tavares might be one of them. But I know another guy who's doing research on the food cutoff of food production, deliberately cutoff of food production, such that people will overnight go hungry. Now, they could do this in various ways. They could have a false flag attack. I don't even want to give out any ideas.
Yeah.
But I mean, the ideas have probably already been hatched by the power elite, I'm sure. But they could have a false flag attack on key installations. I won't mention any but types of them, but key installations that would affect the food distribution system in the country. And they would do that deliberately. I hope it doesn't happen. No one, no decent human being would want anything like that to happen. But we're hoping that these evil elite do not do that. They know that when they cut off food to the people, they have the people by the throat. They have the people completely subordinate and obedient to them when they cut off food.
And look what's happening in California with the drought. And you know, then you've got floods in other areas. So there's no doubt our food's being affected. And, you know, it's going to come down to, well, don't worry, Monsanto's got something to feed you.
Yeah, right, right. And you have to be obedient to do what they say, you know, and go to the camps, go to the FEMA camps, where death camps, actually. I mean, if you look at history, what were those camps where they took people to in Nazi Germany? Death camps.
Yeah.
And in Russia, in the Ukrainians. So many Ukrainians were murdered by starvation by Joseph Stalin. It's just horrible. So we have to be prepared. I want to get back to the subject of Planet X, because we see that all these events that we're talking about with Jade Helm and this crazy elite push to antagonize Russia and provoke a war with Russia is all part of the end time, what seems to be a disaster about ready to break. And they're trying to push it to like a pimple that's ready to burst. They're trying to push it to the breaking point prematurely so that they can go underground to their secret elaborate cities. These are secret cities, and it's not easy to keep cities like that secret when they cost literally $1 trillion or more were built over a period of decades. Cheyenne Mountain is one of them, and we read, and I had posted this article from a major newspaper, the Daily Mail, the London Daily Mail,
mm-hmm.
stating that they're opening up Cheyenne Mountain, and after having it closed down for so many years, well, it really wasn't closed down. They said it was closed down to take away the public, to move the distract the public eye from it. But now there are reports that it's coming out, and they're opening up, and obviously the power elite are ready to descend into these elaborate underground cities, survival cities, such as Cheyenne Mountain in Wyoming. Incidentally, Alex Merklinger, whom you may have heard of or may even know from Arizona or New Mexico, I think it is. Well, he retired, but he was a famous talk show host, and the same genre as your show is, with, you know, mystical subjects. It was called Mysteries of the Mind. And Alex Merklinger had told me a number of years ago that the Queen Elizabeth, the British Crown, had purchased large tracts of land in or around Crestone, Colorado, Crestone, and which I believe is somewhere near those underground cities. And the underground city, Cheyenne Mountain, I believe, is so many miles, not too many miles away from the Denver airport. The Denver airport, again, here's another, there's so many connections, it's hard to even consider them all evening. But the Denver airport, as many people know, is loaded with these murals, these ghastly murals of people being killed in annihilation and disease and mass warfare. All of these are depicted symbolically in these murals of children dying, the sun scorching the earth, people dying from war and starvation, all that which is prophesied in the book of Revelation, when the book of God spoke to the Lord Jesus, gave the prophecies of the end times while he was from heaven to his apostle John in the book of Revelation. And in Revelation, all these things are predicted: the earthquakes, the scorching from the sun, which is depicted in the murals at the Denver airport, where people are being scorched from the sun. And
well,
I believe that
John is 106 degrees here in Columbia, South Carolina today.
That's a good point. I mean, we're having epic record heat. The Weather Channel is just flipping over. I mean, flipping. reporting all this stuff, saying, what is going on? I mean, this is record heat all over. And at the Southwest, you know, again, up 115 degrees or whatever. And this early in the season, it's just beginning, the summer has just begun. I mean, can you imagine how hot it's going to get in the Southeast and the Southwest when you get to the deep portion, the deep time period of the summer around late July?
No, we had a northern type summer here, starting like at the end of March. I mean, it was beautiful, and then all of a sudden, here come the heat wave, and boy, when it hits, it hits.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, there's so much. I don't know where to start, but I guess I can digress a little bit into the idea of the Earth going into an quasi-elliptical orbit around the sun. You know, right now the Earth is in pretty much a circular orbit around the sun. And if what happens is, you know, God is just amazing the way he has created the solar system such that all the planets have a gravitational pull on one another, and it's a very delicate balance of gravitational pull between all the different planets and planet Earth that keeps planet Earth healthy and keeps the people on Earth alive and life going along normally. And now when that balance of gravitational pull between the various planets in the solar system is displaced or disrupted, that delicate balance is disrupted by an incoming object. A very large gravitational object like this dwarf star. This was on the Weather Channel. It was so graphically depicted on the Weather Channel in one of their series called Forecasting the End. You can go to YouTube, probably find it. Forecasting the End. It's his first episode of that particular series. And what it depicts is, and I actually recorded it, I put it on my Vimeo channel on the internet, where it shows that if an object comes in, they call it rogue planets. That's the title of this particular episode, Rogue Planets. And when an object comes in, they show it graphically in a picture of the solar system. This object comes in, they say that Jupiter and Saturn, well, mainly Jupiter, act as shepherds for planet Earth and for the other planets, keep them in their proper orbit like shepherds. And when an object comes in, it acts as a disruptive shepherd or a disruptor. It exerts a gravitational pull, and which it becomes exponentially powerful as that object, that intruding object, comes closer and closer into the inner solar system. It begins to pull all the other planets out of their normal, healthy orbits and pulls planet Earth from a circular orbit around the sun to an elliptical orbit. And they say in the Weather Channel episode, Rogue Planets, in the series Forecasting the End, they say that if this were to happen, a rogue planet came in, it would cause Earth's orbit to become elliptical, which would mean you would be extremely cold when the Earth moved out into far away in its elliptical orbit around the sun, because the sun would not be at the center of the ellipse. If you can visualize an ellipse, an elongated, stretched out circle, it being the elliptical orbit, well, the sun would not be at the very center. The sun would be like a fish's eye. If you look at a fish and you see the eye of the fish is offset, it's way up near the head, well, that would be where the sun is. So if Earth were to go into an elliptical orbit like that, you could visualize how far away Earth would be from the sun during the winter time, during one season of the year. Right. It would be so cold that there would be mass death on Earth. Then during the summertime, it would be so hot that there would be further mass death on Earth from the extremely hot, unbearably hot summers and the unbearably cold winters. So maybe that's what we're seeing here with this crazy weather. I don't know. I mean,
we are. And John,
horrible.
Here's something else that drives me crazy is why are these climate scientists getting caught constantly fudging the data? What are they trying to hide?
That's a good point. It's a very good point because you're absolutely correct. The data has been fudged on earthquakes. Oh, it's notoriously bad. I mean, they have changed the rating, the magnitude scale of the earthquakes. They got rid of the Richter scale and they changed it to some other scale that's very unreliable and it's unscientific. So yeah, you're right. And so all the earthquakes that you see now are falsely recorded as being lower in magnitude than they actually are. And that has been going, that deception has been going on with the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, for at least, for several decades now, a couple decades.
I was going to say, I think it's been about 20 years now when they lowered it. They said, oh, we're going to lower the Richter scale. Why would you do that? What made them decide that they want to lower it? Oh, because the earthquakes are going to be bigger.
Right, exactly. And that's just one other, there are other things that would show where they're lying about data. For example, when comets would come into the sun and cause great solar flares or reactions, which could be noticed, detected by the SOHO satellite that sits out in space, the SOHO would mysteriously and conveniently go down, and you would lose the images during that critical period. And that happened so many times. So, yeah, there are many cases of data being falsified or data being erased. Another instance, which I just found out about yesterday, was NASA has a web page that ends with the letters CA, nasa.gov/CA. You could look that up, type it in. I think the CA stands for close something. But anyway, what that represents is there's their NASA's chart table of predicted close near Earth objects that are could threaten life on Earth. Now, one person on Godlike Productions, which is sort of like an advanced kind of a forum for people who are in the know, mm-hmm. and has always been pretty. Provided a lot of good leading edge information, preliminary information that before other people got it. Well, Godlike Productions had mentioned, someone said on there that they used to be able to see that CA page and see the dates that were predicted asteroid near passes to Earth, the dates way into the future. Now, all of a sudden, the dates don't go way out to the future, so you cannot see their NASA's predicted dates for near-Earth objects beyond the time of mid-August or late August of this year. And that's another red flag, another indication that they may be covering up vital information or threatening information that they don't want the public to know about that would panic the public. And isn't it strange, isn't it coincidental, or maybe not so coincidental, that August 23rd, when that chart ends and you can't see beyond that date for near-Earth objects, September is supposed to be a big month or an ominous month.
Uh-huh.
Where people are saying, think something's going to happen in September. Now, they have all these events, all these horrible eventualities or possibilities seem to be lining up for sometime in the near future. It could be September, I don't know. But look, you got World War III lining up for sometime in the near future, where they're crazy maniacs, not so crazy, that ruling elite are trying to push Russia into a nuclear war, and which would, the whole world would go into a nuclear holocaust. Well, that's one of the events. Then the other event would be the collapse of the economy, which appears to be coming soon. All the reliable reporters are telling us, even congressmen who are very reliable and highly credible, respected Congressman Ron Paul is warning almost hysterically that things are about to collapse. All the very best economic websites researchers are saying the same thing.
Things are definitely going to crash. So you're seeing it. You know, you're seeing what happened to Greece not too long ago, and now you got look what's happening to the Greeks, and it's going to continue. We know that China is trying to get a world currency of their own, and probably going to succeed at it. Now you're going to see there's going to be some major changes, and my prediction has been October. I keep thinking October surprise. I don't know. That's what keeps running through my head. I just think that by October, whatever they're planning is going to be in motion. And I think if it is Planet X we need to worry about, then I think that what they're going to do is they're going to start the world wars. Obviously, you know, it's going to reach here before anything shows up in the sky. And they're going to make sure they've got us good and distracted and worn down by the time something like that happens. And I think that it's coming, and I think it's coming real soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sure sounds like you may be right. September, October, November, I don't like to set dates, but Jesus said in the Bible, when you see these signs, no one knows the hour nor the day, but when you see these signs, know that it's near. That's all you have to know, is that it's coming soon, and you better get prepared. The World War III, the collapse of the economy, these power elite fleeing underground. Now, this is another worrisome fact. I believe it's a fact. And that is that people will say, well, don't worry about it. The elite would never start World War III because they themselves would be annihilated. No, that's a false assumption. The power elite believe that they can go underground and survive a nuclear war and then come up to the surface after everything is over and then pick up the pieces and form their new world order, because now the whole world has been devastated by nuclear war. Everybody has been, much of the population is dead or dying. And then they can take over with their greatly reduced population, which is what they have always vowed they wanted to produce, was a population, or reduce the population down to 500 million. That happens to be one out of, you know, half a billion out of what is presently around 13 billion people on the Earth. So that would mean you're killing, or say, let's say 12 billion people on the Earth. 12 billion. Wait a minute, I got my numbers. I'm sorry.
What?
7 billion. 7 billion people on the Earth. That if they were to bring the population down to a half billion, that would be like they'd have to kill 12 out of every 13 people on Earth. Or 13 out of every 14.
Oh, and I'm sure that they're planning on it. I mean, they've even done things in some places where they're making it illegal to be homeless. And so then if they do have to pick you up for being homeless, they'll bring you to these FEMA camps. And the only way the homeless get to leave is if they get in one of the, federal vans and get driven to their appointments. And so I've seen this happening, and I'm thinking if I was going to do it, how would I do it? And I would do it in layers. I certainly wouldn't want to alarm all the people at one time. So what I would do is you pick at, you know, little groups here and there. So let's hit the homeless. So now we're going to hit this group and that group, and little by little, before you know it, you know, you make it manageable. You take away the internet, you take away the guns, and then you start going door to door.
Yeah, right. I mean, it sure looks like they're planning to suppress the population and getting ready for a mass kill off of the population. The way to do it, the way Stalin did it, was with starvation. I mean, that's the easiest way, and with disease. And again, where do you see all this projected verification? You see it in the Bible, in the book of Revelation. For example, I believe it's chapter 6 of the book of Revelation. the Lord Jesus spoke to his apostle John through, John said he was in the spirit of God, and he heard from God. He was given these visions. Many other people have gotten visions that turned out to be accurate. Edgar Cayce is one of them. His visions were extremely accurate. And, well, Apostle John got similar visions from the Son of God, which said that there first there would be a white horse, and the white horse would come out to conquering and to conquer. Now, just about every prophecy preacher and teacher has mistakenly believed that symbol of the white horse is the rider on the white horse is the Antichrist. That's wrong. The rider on the white horse is the Lord Jesus Christ. And when he says he went out conquering and to conquer, that means the conquering was done throughout the last 1900 centuries, where actually Satan was conquered, when the Lord paid for all of the sins of everyone on earth, so that everyone is now liberated from the prison of eternal death. Okay, that was the first conquering of evil. The second conquering is coming when he comes back again. Again, it's predicted that Planet X and is either the Lord Jesus as the angel of death, or the Planet X as the Lord Jesus angel, an angel of his. But in any case, we see in, for example, the first coming of this planet, the last coming, I should say, the last intrusion of this planet 36 and a half centuries ago, was recorded in the book of Exodus, chapter 12 of the Bible, where the people, the Israelites, were visited by a death angel. This was what God told Moses, and Moses recorded it. God said, I will send the death angel over. People didn't understand what that meant, over. Well, it was a comet. It was a dwarf star on a cometary orbit. Came in 36 and a half centuries ago. It caused all kinds of destruction on Earth, including meteor showers and hail that came down like fire that riddled the ground electrically, because it was discharging from comets. You see these, the stones and hail, the rock hail and perhaps ice hail, but probably the rock hail, is covered with plasma from these objects that penetrate the heliosphere surrounding our entire solar system. When they come in from deep space on a cometary orbit every 36 and a half centuries ago, this dwarf star is gravitationally dragging, like a vacuum cleaner, all sizes of other objects that it picks up in deep space like a magnet. And when it breaks through the heliosphere, which is a plasma sphere that's electrically charged gases, ionized gases, surrounding the entire solar system, it has to penetrate that sphere, sort of the doorway to our solar system. All these objects become engulfed like bubble gum, like going through a bubble gum bubble. And they become engulfed with a sticky, not bubblegum sticky, but electrically sticky plasma. Mm-hmm. Just as you have electrical, when you pick up all these styrofoam packing peanuts in a box of packing, they stick to your hands magically, it seems, and you can't get them off because of the electrical charge, the attraction, the static charge. Well, the same thing happens with these objects when they come in. And they bust through, they pick up all the plasma, and they come from through the outer solar system into the inner solar system, pass by Earth, don't hit Earth. I mean, the dwarf star does not hit Earth, but all the other objects surrounding it in a field of millions and millions of miles in diameter. It's like a beehive surrounded by a huge swarm of celestial bees, and all these bees, which are comets asteroids and meteors and even rocks and boulders, are all saturated with this plasma, so that you can visualize how they, when they are gravitationally pulled into Earth's gravitational field. As they're passing by, they're sucked in by Earth's gravitational force field, but at the same time they're electrically charged, so when they hit the ground there would be a discharging. When you get close to ground, which is Earth ground, zero electrical potential, they'll discharge. And that's what the book of Exodus describes, almost like machine gun bullets. It says hail hitting the ground in streams of fire, and that's an electrical discharge. Well, that's what happened when this object came by. It passed by. The huge object itself did not hit Earth, as recorded in the book of Exodus, chapter 12. But all of its surrounding bees, so to speak, were sucked in, and they are the ones that hit Earth and caused massive death in Egypt. We see this coming from the sky every 36 and a half centuries ago. Scientific evidence has been shown to corroborate this timing, this time interval of 36 and a half centuries. Every 36 and a half centuries, this object comes into our solar system and back out again. And you might ask, why is it every 36 and a half centuries? Well, if you look at the description, the definition of a comet is periodic. It travels on an elliptical orbit, that is a long, stretched out circular orbit, but it's stretched out to become highly elliptical. And is the longest object. This dwarf star would be a long period, what's called a long period comet, meaning its period, the time it takes to make one cycle into and out of our solar system, would be very, very long, like centuries. Well, the period happens to be 36 and a half centuries. Well, if you look back at the archaeologists' studies, you'll find that there was an explosion of the great Santorini volcanic caldera. A caldera is like a big mountain with a big lake of water on top of it. The Santorini volcanic caldera exploded with the greatest volcanic explosive index, VEI, the greatest VEI ever recorded in history. They estimate the date of that explosion of the Santorini volcanic caldera was around 35 to 37 centuries ago. Well, that's what the proposed comet of the cometary period of Planet X is, 36 and a half centuries. It falls within that time frame. But to further narrow down the precision, the precise time that this comet came in, we can look at the records of the tree rings. And I presume that these tree rings were petrified trees, that like sort of like the petrified forest that we've all heard of. The trees are petrified, but you could still see the tree rings, trace the tree rings on these ancient trees, and find out that the tree rings were narrowed. And this I got from Wikipedia. You can find it yourself. Tree rings were narrowed all over the world, in the British Isles, in North America. The various trees were noticeably narrowed around, and they get it down to a very precise date, around 3,650 years ago, plus or minus 10 years. So that's pretty precise a reckoning of the date. 36 and a half centuries ago, according to ecologists who are not even Christian, may not even be Christian, and who don't even know anything about the Bible, they say that's when these tree rings were narrowed. Well, the tree rings would have been narrowed due to the volcanic explosions and eruptions of several hundred volcanoes, at least several hundred on planet Earth, which would have covered the entire atmosphere of planet Earth with a blanket of ash. Mm-hmm. And so there you have a precise scientific dating, indexing of this, the last time that this planet this brown dwarf star came in, and its gravitational and magnetic pull on Earth stimulated the Earth and excited the Earth so much that it caused hundreds of volcanoes, many of them extinct, to erupt all at the same time, and the whole Earth went into a nuclear winter, so to speak. In fact, you can find this recorded. There was a tablet found in a place called El Arish in Egypt, I believe. You can look that up, El Arish. And on the tablet, it explained what some of the survivors, the Egyptian survivors, recorded as having happened to them. They said it was so dark, the sky was covered with a dark cast, a blanket, and it was so dark that they couldn't even see each other, one another, beside, as they were standing or sitting beside one another. They tried to light a fire, and the winds were so severe they could never keep the fire going. It was horrible. And every once you would see the black sky above, peppered with flashes, bright flashes, like a den of, they called it a den of fire, above the black clouds. Now you can imagine, this has been scientifically described by volcanologists, this phenomenon, where you have these ashes, volcanic ashes, blown into the sky from an eruption. And what happens is the charge, electric charge on these particles of carbon begin to they build up until they discharge, until there's a discharging, and that's what the lightning effect is in the sky. So all of this has been, well, again, we have a time indexing scientifically through. Are you still there, Michael?
Oh, I'm definitely here. Yeah, I was going to say, something seems to be ticking our sun off, too.
Yeah, well, the sun is basically an electrical generator, besides being a nuclear thermonuclear fusion furnace. It's also an electrical generator because the sun blows off charged particles, and these charged particles, we're all familiar with them, they're electrons, for one thing, and they're also protons, which are hydrogen nuclei. You see, hydrogen is the smallest element on the periodic chart, if I remember correctly from my chemistry. College chemistry. Mm-hmm. And hydrogen has a nucleus with an atomic mass, atomic charge of one, which means it only needs one electron in its outer, revolving around it in its outer valence band to make it neutral. It's got a plus one, a positive charge in the nucleus, and a negative electron revolving around it. But when that atom, when that electron is separated from that hydrogen atom, now the hydrogen atom becomes what is called an ion. It becomes positively charged because it has lost its sole orbiting electron. So now these hydrogen ions, with all their displaced electrons, are blown out by the sun in what's called the solar winds. And these electrons strike Earth, cause auroras if they're heavy enough. The electrons and protons. The protons are the hydrogen nuclei, positively charged, as opposed to the negatively charged electrons. And all these solar winds are blown out. All the planets in the solar system feel that solar blast. The solar winds travel far, far out into beyond the solar system. But, of course, the electrons, which are sort of, you might visualize them as little, like little wiffle balls that are hit by a baseball player. If you try to hit a wiffle ball, one of those little, spongy things or hollow ball, it's not going to go very far because it doesn't have much mass. So the electrons don't seem to travel very far. They stay pretty close to the sun itself in sort of a space charge. Whereas, I mean, a lot of them do go out to reach Earth also.
Well, let me ask you.
Protons really go far out. They create the heliosphere that I was telling you about before. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, what might be able to, I mean, how do we have to rethink you know, the sun at some point, because, or these pictures have been faked, but I've seen objects next to the sun that almost look like they're feeding energy off of the sun. And I'm wondering...
Yeah, they look like discs or like wing globes.
Well, yeah, there's some of those, and I've even seen some triangle-type objects, like pyramid-shaped typed objects near the sun that in some pictures. And I'm thinking, what could possibly get that close to the sun and not just melt away?
Right. Well, they're not made out of ice. Well, I think that's a misconception that science has had for many years, that comets are dirty snowballs. That James McCanny has often said that comets are not dirty snowballs. And, they're rocks. Now they're finding out from NASA's explorations and visitations to comets, they found out that they're not dirty snowballs. And you would expect them to apologize and say we were wrong, but they really don't. They just try to gloss over it and hope that you'll forget that they have been preaching dirty snowballs for so many years, and they're wrong. So that's why they don't melt, because they're rocks. They're heavy. Many solid elements are comprise these comets. When they get toward the sun, they appear to look like a frisbee. You know, the flying disc, and they appear to look like a winged globe. Now, the winged globe is something that effect is caused by the plasma that it engulfs, that sticky, electrically sticky plasma that engulfs these incoming objects. As I mentioned before, they pick up the plasma as if bees would pick up intruding bees coming into our solar system, flying through that, what I call a electrical bubblegum bubble, the heliosphere surrounding our solar system. They fly through it, they pick up all that sticky electrical bubblegum called plasma, and when they get close to the sun, now the sun is, because of those light electrons that can't travel very far, like little wiffle balls that can't go very far, there's a huge space charge of electrons close to the sun, and those electrons will attract the positive protons that were picked up by the incoming comets way out in the heliosphere. Now the plus positive protons surrounding the comets will be attracted to the negative charge of the sun, and what happens is the solar winds blowing out will electrically affect them and cause them to move like wings, to spread apart, so that that bubblegum engulfing the comet now becomes stretched out laterally like two wings on an eagle, on a bird. And in fact, if you look at all the sagas and legends from ancient civilizations around the world, they all depict what they call a winged globe or a bird. The Aztecs, I believe, the Indians from their ancient legends, talk about the thunderbird in the sky. You see, they saw it, everybody around the world saw it in ancient times when it came in. They saw the comets that were associated with this dwarf star, as well as the dwarf star itself. But those comets, as they get close to the sun, are going to spread out their plasma laterally and make it look like arms or wings. And in fact, these were worshipped by the ancient civilization. This winged globe became a symbol of worship by the ancient Babylonians, by the ancient Ninevites. All the civilizations of the world worshipped it. And Zechariah Sitchin, the great archaeologist and historian, ancient historian, in his book, his landmark book, The Twelfth Planet, the late Zechariah Sitchin says that that winged globe was seen on all the temples and in palaces. That symbol was placed in many places of prominence because it was a symbol of worship. This thing was so powerful that it was indelibly recorded in the minds of the cultures of those days, those that survived anyway. So we see this happening again now today, the same scientific phenomenon because science hasn't changed from centuries ago till today. You're still going to have that winged globe effect as the object comes in. But as it gets closer, the ones that come, the big one, the big guy that comes really close to Earth, saturated with plasma, not only will it have be surrounded with plasma and its plasma will stretch out laterally like two wings, but also as it gets close enough to Earth, its plasma will also discharge straight down to Earth, and what you will have is a cross, the symbol of the cross. And the Lord Jesus prophesied that when he comes back, he says, you will see the sign of my sign in the sky. And that's, but nobody understood from the Bible what he was talking about. What's his sign? What's this? He called himself the Son of Man. What's the sign of the Son of Man? You would think that the preachers would all recognize it, or it would all click in their minds, but it didn't.
Well, I got to tell you, John,
that's the cross.
I've seen many signs in the sky as of late. I mean, I looked at it. I always thought of it like many different ways. I mean, like we would see signs in the sky, and that would make sense. We've seen asteroids come close. We've seen comets come and blow up over Russia. Chemtrails, for the many reasons they're doing that, and God only knows what else is going on up there. So that's what I always thought. But a cross. Now, somebody has sent me pictures of what looked like a cross in the sky once, but I got to be honest, I didn't believe them. I thought they had to have photoshopped it, but.
That's the Thunderbird, actually. The Thunderbird is a cross. You see, the Aztecs, I believe, that when they saw it, it was so close enough to their section of the Earth that some comets would actually discharge down to the Earth, and that's what would cause the body of the Thunderbird. The wings would be the lateral plasma display, and the body would, as it gets close enough, it'll discharge to the Earth. We have not seen such horrific celestial flybys yet, but you're right. We're going to see all kinds of comets, and we're going to see meteors, and I hope not. We don't see any asteroids striking the Earth. But you're right about all the signs. One of them, toward the end, is going to be the cross or the winged globe. Certainly the winged globe, because all the civilizations recorded it. Zechariah Sitchin talks about that. How infamous or famous and feared that winged globe was, because it came in the sky and it just terrified everyone on Earth. So we haven't gotten to that point yet where you're going to see it, but you do see the same phenomenon now with the sun, because when these comets come in, have you seen pictures of the SOHO pit photos of the sun, the comets coming into the sun? They look like flying discs, like the winged globes. And there's your clue right there, that this phenomenon will intensify and magnify as we get closer, as this brown dwarf comes closer and closer, and its beehive becomes denser and denser in our inner solar system.
All right. And so, John, we've got to take a break here, and that would be a great place to hold on, and we'll pick right back up when we get back. We're going to be a few minutes, probably a good 5 minutes, and I'll be putting you on hold here until we get back, so it'll get a little quiet for you. So just hang in there with me. We didn't hang up on you. So John DiNardo is my guest. We are discussing Planet X. He makes a hell of a case for it, and with all this other stuff, folks, I never said it wasn't true. I never said that it was right around the corner. What I am saying is there is some truth to it, and there's, some great cases could be made for this, and it's worth paying attention to, I think. Not going crazy over, because when something like this does happen, if and when it does happen, then there's not going to be too much we could do about it anyways. People who think they're safe underground, I don't know about that. People who think they're safe in the mountains, not so sure about that either. I think you just got to be lucky and be in the right spot. And who knows? Any one of us could be already. That's like people who take off out of a house when a tornado comes and go to their neighbor's house, and their house is not touched, the neighbor's house is destroyed, you know? So, I don't know. But, folks, we'll be back. I'd love to take some calls from you, 803-317-2264, and I'd love to do it after the break. So, we'll be back in a moment. This is Late Night in the Midlands on the LNM Radio Network, the Dark Matter Radio Network, K98 Talk, and High Point Radio. We'll be right back. Whether you believe in Planet X or whether you're somebody who has been paying attention to what's really going on around the world, then you know something is coming, for God's sake. Something is coming. So if you're not going to take Planet X serious, and I'm not telling you you have to, but if you're not going to, at least take serious the fact that something big, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a planet, something big is coming. These governments around the world, including the worst one of them all, the United States, unfortunately, we have been seized, and our government has gone rogue, just like this planet we're talking about. But believe me, something is coming. We've got tanks being brought to Europe. We've got military movement. I don't need to go through all that. Me and John have done a great job of doing that already, I think. So something is coming. And folks, I don't do this because I want to get rich. I don't do this because I want to be famous. I do this because I want to do my part for humanity. And I'm telling you, prepare. If you got a sheep in your family, if you have a sheep who doesn't believe any of this stuff, they think that it's all a bunch of nonsense, just, you know, do the best you can. Leave a grab bag for them, you know, and hope for the best, pray for them, and hopefully they'll manage. But, you know, when you got kids and you got other family to think about, you know, take it a little. I'm not saying dig a hole and make a bunker, because that's not going to do you a bit of good, I don't think, in this instance. I wouldn't want to be under the ground in anything when something like a Planet X come by. And I don't even know. I don't know. All I'm saying is World War III is on the doorstep here. It's happening other places in the world, but it's on our doorstep. And so if Planet X isn't enough for you, what human beings are doing right here on this planet should be. And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm trying to prepare you. That's all. I'm not making special videos in the middle of the night staring into the camera and saying, I'm so afraid, like some people are doing. But let's get on with it. My guest is John DiNardo. And folks, the call-in number is 803-317-2264. If you want to call in, you could also call in using our Skype ID. Just Skype to Skype us. Late Night in the Midlands. And don't forget subscriptions, folks. We have we now offer the archives as part of our subscriptions. We've had to do it because of piracy. And so if you want to keep up with us after the live show, that's one way to do it. But of course, the show reruns also on LNM. And of course, I'm also on the Dark Matter Radio Network on Saturdays. That's open to you. And we give the first hour free. And then if you want to continue, if it's something you think you're interested in, then you would subscribe. And that keeps us on the air, and it keeps the piracy down to a minimum, because I got into it last night about how we have been stolen from, robbed, literally just beaten down and robbed. And so we're trying to do something about that. But John, we are back, and you left off. You were talking about this planet, Planet X, this dwarf star, as a matter of fact, you were talking about, and the signs that we'll be seeing in the sky, I think, is where we left off.
Right. And you had mentioned some of the signs, Michael. For example, the meteorite that struck Chelyabinsk in Russia, I believe it was January of 2013, was it? Anyway, you're right. We're going to see more meteor strikes. We have been seeing more bolide, what they call bolide or bullet-like objects striking Earth and shooting stars. There's been great increase in the number of sightings of shooting stars, which are nothing more than meteors that plummet to the Earth, and the friction of the air against these plummeting objects creates so much heat in the meteor that the meteor actually explodes before it even strikes the Earth. But when the meteor does not explode, when it continues and strikes the Earth, it's called a meteorite. And the way I remember that is the meteor strikes right into the ground. So that's what the difference between a meteor, which doesn't hit the ground, and a meteorite, which does hit the ground.
Ah.
So we're seeing more of those bullet-like or bolide strikes on Earth. More shooting stars are being observed. All sorts of signs. We had Comet Holmes back around 2008. That comet, as you recall, came in and stayed there a number. It was a visitor, a very bright lamp in the sky that lasted for several weeks. In fact, they said when it really lit up and just bloomed and blossomed, it became actually brighter than the sun, and that's really hard to believe. But that's what the scientists tell us that happened to Comet Holmes. And, of course, it found its way back out, I believe, back out of our solar system. So we're seeing more comets coming in, and these are all part of the gang of the beehive, the bee swarm that surrounds this giant celestial beehive, which NASA calls Planet X, and which the ancients called Nibiru, meaning the planet of the crossing, like a planet, like, for example, the crossing would be compared to a racetrack with runners. You've seen a circular racetrack in the Olympics, and each runner is in one of the concentric tracks, rings within rings, tracks within tracks. Each runner has his own path so that they don't bump into each other. They don't collide with one another. That's sort of like our orbiting planets. Every planet has its orbiting path so they do not collide as they revolve around the sun. But if you were to have an intruder, one that crosses the path like in a racetrack, some crazed spectator might, for example, run through the track, going across all the paths and bumping into some of the, or missing some of the running circular track stars, then that's what this system, incoming system would be. It would be a planet of the crossing. That's how they got the name Nibiru, the ancients, because it crossed the orbits. Now, of course, it doesn't hit. It's very unlikely that it will hit any of the planets. But it does, its focus is the sun, because the sun is the great gravitational fisherman that's reeling in this object, pulling it in gravitationally, and it will revolve around the sun. Now, people might say, well, why doesn't it strike the sun? It has never done that before, otherwise we would not be here today. But there is a magnetic field, a very strong magnetic field that surrounds all the stars. Like, for example, our sun is a star, and our sun has a strong magnetic field. Earth has a magnetic field, too. Jupiter has a strong magnetic field, and Jupiter is very much like Planet X. Well, can you imagine when these two magnetic fields interact with one another? Maybe God made it this way, but the magnetic interaction tends to be that of repulsion between the two objects. They tend to repel one another. So instead of this incoming dwarf star striking the sun, which is pulling it in, this incoming dwarf star will revolve around the sun. It overshoots the sun from below. It's coming from below our ecliptic or circular or planet disk in space on which all the planets revolve. Dr. Harrington determined that it's coming in from below. It's coming up, and it's going toward the sun, and it's going to revolve around as it overshoots beneath the sun, which it might have already overshot by now. And when that happens, of course, it's going to slow down, because now it's overshot and the sun is pulling it back again. It's like a like a boy running past a man, right?
Ah.
And the boy is wearing pants with suspenders, for example. This is just a ridiculous analogy, but it really serves to show you. The boy runs past the man, and the man grabs the boy as he's running from the back, grabs him from the back of his suspenders and pulls him back. Well, now what's going to happen is the boy begins to decelerate in his running, in his overshoot, in his passing by the man, and the boy is going to slowly slow down in his fly away, in his escape from the man, and then gradually till he pulls back, and his velocity will become zero, and then change direction and come back again toward that pulling force. Well, that's what happens to this object, and as a result, it makes a circular path or an elliptical path around the sun, in which it's very slow, like a truck going very fast on a highway. And all of a sudden, the truck has to make a U-turn. The truck has to slow down, or else its centrifugal force will throw it off the road, off of its path.
Mm-hmm.
So the truck will slow down, make the U-turn, and come around. That's what's happening to this object. It's slowing down. And that's why the date of its arrival seems to have been delayed, according to those who have made predictions. But it's coming in. We're starting to see the changes now. If you notice that there were big earthquakes, major earthquakes that occurred around 2009, 2010 in Chile and Haiti and New Zealand, Christchurch, New Zealand.
Oh yeah.
All kinds of huge earthquakes.
I think we're in for a big one because, you know, and I still haven't got a chance to look into this as deep as I'd like to, but it is my understanding that the government now, you know, all the other weird things they've ordered, like guillotines, but portable mortuaries they've been putting on order. There's a contract, apparently, for those now. And they want to put them, you know, in the areas of the New Madrid Fault. So you got to wonder, you know, what are they preparing for? Again, you know, it's just,
right.
You look at, I consider them the animals. Watch the animals, and you'll know, you know, when it's coming.
Right. You mean like these plastic FEMA coffins that they have stacked up?
No, not the coffins. Actual portable, mobile type mortuaries where they can get the bodies and do what they got to do to them and then get rid of them.
Yeah. And the FEMA coffins that we've seen videos of, these FEMA coffins stacked up in large quantities. So you're right. I mean, it's very scary. We have to turn our minds to God. You know, you keep your mind focused on God's presence. It seems like such a simple thing to do, and yet it's very difficult because there's a spiritual intervention, disruption. Spirits try to, and I believe, I mean, coming from a scientific background, I've learned that spirituality can be is also compliant and consistent with science. I mean, if you look at some of the metaphysical things that happen, they can be scientifically explained, like spirits, the spirit of the human being after we die. Well, anyway, these evil spirits, as the American Indians knew very well, because they were close to the earth and close to nature, they sensed the presence of these spirits, these evil spirits. And those evil spirits are the ones that keep us distracted, try to distract our minds from the presence of the God who loves us and the God who keeps our hearts beating. But you keep your mind focused on God despite the resistance from the enemy, spiritual enemies, and God promises to protect you from these earth disasters that are occurring. Supernatural protection. And I have had supernatural protection in an auto accident once in my life. it was so, I mean, I should have been killed, and yet I came out of it without any injuries at all.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and that's where I stand with all this. No matter what's coming, I will do what I have to do, you know, but when it comes down to push and shove, I leave my you know, it's all in the hands of the Great One, wherever and whoever he is, or she, or whatever. I leave it in the hands of that one. You know, it's, if I'm to survive, I will survive. I mean, there's people who are, you know, going crazy, and they're, you know, we got to get our bunkers, or we got to move up to the mountains. And I'm thinking, when something like this happens, how do you know what mountains will still be standing? How do you know which ground will still be, you know, you might get buried alive under it. So it comes a point where, yes, prepare, but, you know, you're going to at some point be at the mercy of the universe, if you will.
Well, you're right, Michael. I mean, we will be able to prepare while the situation is not too disastrous. When, you know, there are certain disasters, yes, we can overcome them, get through them by having rafts, for example, rubber rafts, in the event of major flooding. We can do things to protect ourselves, go to high ground, things like that, and also have food supplies. But the disasters will intensify. They have to intensify to the point where no human being can do anything. And that, again, that is recorded from the last disaster that occurred. Again, I emphasize this time indexing, that it serves as a proof that this object is coming in, and that is 36 and a half centuries ago, according to the explosion of the Santorini volcanic caldera, and according to the scientific studies, well, the geological, you know, studies of that explosion and when it occurred, around 36 and a half centuries ago, and also the tree rings that have been analyzed by ecologists and ancient biologists. That indicate to a very narrow time interval of plus or minus 10 years of accuracy, which is amazing. They've determined that the tree rings were narrowed about 36 and a half centuries ago. Well, that tells us that people back then, the survivors, told us how severe it got, to the point where there was no way that any kind of preparation would have saved them, because the events were just too disastrous at that time, where they couldn't even see each other. They had to go into a cave, and some of them survived by going into very deep caves. But, I mean, they couldn't even see one another. The winds were horrific. The sky was covered with ash. There was lightning in the discharges between the charged carbon particles blown up by the volcanic eruptions, which blanketed the entire atmosphere of planet Earth. It was really horrendous. So then, at that time, you would call out to God. Even an atheist would call out to God. But you and I are going to be, and hopefully our friends listening will be, calling out to God now, but, you know, walking with Him. And God is presently with us and listening to us right now. I mean, after all, who keeps your heart beating? Where does that impulse come from that beats your heart every second, even while you're unconsciously asleep 8 hours every day for thousands of days during your lifetime? Somebody, some loving, faithful being keeps that heart beating, provides the electrical impulse. Otherwise, we would die in our sleep.
That's right.
So there is someone who loves you, who created this miraculous body. I mean, this body is such a gift that, you know, whoever gave it to you loves you, cares about you. So that's the person that you call out. That's the being that you call out to.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
And I was just going to say, you said that the body is such a great gift, and I agree with you. And it kind of reminded me of a metaphor here, and that is that, you know, the elites, they're like those kids that come over who never have anything because they break everything they have. And they come over and they want to destroy our bodies with all the poisons and different things that are being put onto us. And so, you know, maybe something like Planet X would be a cleansing experience. Me, myself, You know, I don't know. It depends if it's as bad as it could get. I don't know if I'd want to survive that. You know, we all say that, though, but I guess when push comes to shove, we're built to survive, you know.
Well, God is going to ensure that if you keep your mind on him, he reads your mind. He knows every thought in our mind every second. That's how powerful God is. He can follow the minds of 7 billion people simultaneously. So if your mind is on him, he knows it. In the scriptures, for example, there was a man named Abraham, and God himself surveyed the minds of all the people on earth, and there was only one man that was thinking of him and feeling his presence and imagining his presence, and that was a man named Abraham. So, you know, I really do believe. I mean, he knows every thought in our mind. So just keep your mind on him, and you have supernatural protection from these disasters. God guarantees it in throughout the scriptures that you will be protected. However, there are evil beings that you're talking about, the New World Order, the global elite, they worship Satan. Now, there's another being that we have evidence that this Satan exists. And the fact that these brilliant people, that New World Order, the global ruling elite, the men who have so esoteric knowledge, they, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, they worship Satan. And there must be something to the existence, some veracity to the existence of this being, Satan, because they themselves worship him as God, and they believe that they're going to be transhumanized into an eternal life. They're going to transcend mortality. That's what they believe. So there you go. There's more evidence that there is also an evil being that wants to kill us. And you can see him, as you say, trying to poison us all to death with GMO foods and vaccines and everything. Well, that's the demonic spirits under the ruler Satan, who hates us, hates humankind, because God loves us.
So how do people get to that point? I mean, they're obviously not born evil, so they're taught at some point, I guess, to be evil, and they get possessed. And you know, I'm not the biggest spiritual kind of guy. Well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not the biggest on the whole, you know, the devil made me do it kind of thing. However, it would seem that these people do not have human souls, because how could they? I mean, how could they?
They can't. When they're indwelled, when a person becomes indwelled by a demon, by a fallen angel, they are then, and they actually turn themselves over deliberately to that fallen angel, then they become a whole different person. They become divorced from God. The infamous serial killer, Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, going way back several decades ago. I don't know if you remember David Berkowitz, Son of Sam, serial killer.
I do.
He was worshiping the devil. And, he went to prison. And he became an evil man, totally divorced from God's presence, God's oversight. And when he went to prison, he told his story. I have it recorded, I should have copied it, the recording. But he was somehow changed by someone in prison, and he began to read the Psalms in the Bible. And he became close to God. So God rescued him from his demonic, his demonic servitude to Satan. And now he says he's a totally different person. He's so ashamed of everything that he did. And he says, you got to be very careful when you start messing with these, getting involved in these satanic rituals. You got to be very careful, because then you become possessed by these demons, and they can cause you to commit all kinds of horrible acts. So there's an example of how a person can be possessed and yet rescued by God. Well, anyway, getting back to the time indexing, 36 and a half centuries ago, we have scientific knowledge that this object came in. Now, that was 1650 B.C. Now, if you go back, do a little arithmetic, you go back another 36 and a half centuries ago, to the second previous orbital intrusion of this dwarf star and its cometary beehive. You'll find out another 36 and a half centuries ago will put you back to the date around 5,300 BC. Now here's more scientific evidence to corroborate that there was a great global catastrophe that occurred around 5,300 BC, that which would be the second orbital incursion of this dwarf star and its celestial beehive. And that is the great flood of Noah's day, 5,300 BC. Most of your Christian scholars have missed the date, have miscalculated the date, but there's two amazing scientists by the name of Pittman and Ryan. I believe that's P-I-T-M-A-N-N. I'm not sure, but I believe that's correct. Ryan, R-Y-A-N. Both of them, I've seen them in television documentaries, and you can read about it on the internet, how they have proven from the Black Sea, researching the Black Sea, that the great flood of Noah's day occurred around 5,300 BC. And you can do, you know, geologists have a way of doing it through looking at sedimentation and various geological characteristics. They can tell about when these events occurred. They say the Great Flood occurred back then. So there you go. There's more scientific evidence in addition to the tree rings that we talked about, in addition to the explosion of the Santorini volcano, that the last orbital incursion was 36 and a half centuries ago, around 1650 BC. The previous incursion to that one was 5300 BC, the Great Flood of Noah's Day. Now let's go back one more orbital cycle, one more orbital incursion before 5300 BC that would put you around 9000 BC, and that's when some of the best archaeologists and ancient historians tell us that the sinking of Atlantis occurred around 9000 BC. So wow, I mean, you're seeing one incursion after another, scientifically verified as to the date. And what does that tell you? Well, we're due for another one. Yeah. Right around this time, because 36 and a half centuries ago, 1650 BC, the time we're coming up to, we're a little bit overdue. And it's possible that the orbit could be changed a little bit, but it's really close.
Well, John, there's a lot of things we're overdue for too. We're overdue for Yellowstone. We're overdue for. So you got to wonder: are we overdue on these things because this object hasn't arrived yet, or you know, because in pole shifts and all these other things that have happened, they say, "Hey, we're overdue. This should have happened by now."
Yeah, this object creates all of these things. I mean, all these volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, everything. You know, speaking of quakes, I want to bring in a little prophecy here from Edgar Cayce, the great sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce.
Okay.
This guy has been so well documented in the thousands of medical readings that he has done while in a trance, a sleeping trance. He was given medical information about people whom he had never met, who lived hundreds of miles away. And he had no way of knowing anything about the person, let alone diagnosing their internal bodily ailments. Yet he was able to, for example, I saw in this wonderful documentary that's called Ancient Prophecies, where they dramatized Edgar Cayce. One case which typifies most of his readings, where he would say he would find out about a woman whose leg was infected. She lived several hundred miles away, and he would, in his sleep, he didn't know, he had no idea what he was saying. He was all coming out of his subconscious mind, obviously from God, from some supernatural power who loves people and wants to heal people, not an evil power that wants to kill people like Satan, but a supernatural power that loves and wants to heal people, and that must be God. Well, anyway, in his subconscious mind, he, in his trance, he would, laying down, say, well, we are now entering the city. We're now going down this street, down State Street. Now we're making a turn. We're going into the greenhouse. Something is cooking on the stove. We're going upstairs to the bedroom. Now we have the body. Oh, yes, we're going through the arms, through the arterial system, through the heart, through the lungs. Ah, now we have the infection. Yes, it's her leg is severely infected. She has been bitten by a brown recluse spider several days ago while sleeping.
Ooh.
And they say, what will be the remedy? The remedy is oil of smoke. Find oil of smoke at Bancroft Pharmacy, Chicago, top shelf. So it's amazing. So they call the Bancroft Pharmacy to find oil of smoke. And the pharmacist said, no, we don't have it here. That company went bankrupt several years ago. We don't have any more oil of smoke. And then they told Edgar Casey in his trance, well, there's no more oil of smoke. And he said, yes, there is. Tell him to look behind the blue bottle on the top shelf. So they called the pharmacy back again. And they said, look behind the blue bottle. And the guy said, you're right. It's there. I didn't even know it was there. So this is amazing. This was a famous documentary, which I know they would not lie. It was on ABC television, recorded in 95. I have the videotape, which I transferred to CD, to DVD, and I have put it up on the internet, and they took it down. YouTube took it down because of some other complaints they had. But I've got to put that back up again. That's a wonderful drama, that Ancient Prophecies, narrated by David McCallum. McCallum, I'm sorry.
That's interesting. I'd like to see that. And yeah, YouTube, they'll take down stuff like that, but when, you know, my show has been pirated like you wouldn't believe, and, I've been dealing with that over on YouTube. So yeah, not the best video outlet, if you will.
Yeah. Well, so that's really shows you how, some that we have prophecy of, prophecy is such a powerful, convincing type of information that we can use to show us that indeed this object is coming in. So where am I going with this Edgar Casey story now? So far I've only spoken about healing, but in this Ancient Prophecies documentary, they were trying to show that Edgar Casey was indeed a very reliable prophet. Excuse me. And what they went on further to say that, okay, now, we're talking about the end of the world in this documentary, Ancient Prophecies. We're talking about some foreboding destruction that's coming. We don't know what it is. But Edgar Casey spoke of it, and I guess he was reliable in his medical healing prophecies. So what did he say in some of his other readings while he was in a trance? Well, what's recorded and documented in his library in the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, Virginia, is that he said, the earth will experience a pole shift such that what was once tropical, what was once a more frigid zone will become the tropical. The earth will shift. And he said also, that's probably one of the most ominous prophecies. And no one understood. This sounded crazy to them that the earth could shift because he had no knowledge of past ancient history. And then he also said, the greater portion of Japan must go into the sea. And I'm sorry, sad to say that. We see signs of that right now.
And if I may add, the Georgia Guidestones, I brought this up before, they have the major languages, I guess that would be left, and Japanese is not one of them on there. There's Chinese, there's no Japanese, though.
Oh, that's a good point. I was not aware of that.
So, yeah, there
well,
is
Japan
a
point. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was just going to say, Japan, you know, you see what's happened there. They're probably on their way.
Yeah, I mean, you see these major earthquakes, I mean, one after another, and it just doesn't seem to stop. But he also, Casey also said that, well, Japan, and he said that, what was it? California will be destroyed before New York.
It's happening.
And the Great California Earthquake, also what's recorded in Edgar Casey's trance-like visions and prophecies is that when you see, this is a warning sign for everybody to remember, follow the eruptions, follow the activity of Mount Vesuvius in Italy, and follow the activity of Mount Pelée in the Lesser Antilles. I think it's the island of Saint Lucia, is it? One of the islands. I think it's Saint Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
In the Lesser Antilles. When either one of those volcanoes, Mount Vesuvius in Italy or Mount Pelée, P-E-L-E-E, and Saint Lucia, and Lesser Antilles, when either one of those erupts, watch out, because several months later, after that, after one of those eruptions, the Great California and West Coast earthquakes will occur.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, earthquakes have been picking up, and I think it wasn't too long ago California was getting a whole bunch of small ones, and they were saying, you know, it seemed like it was building up to the big one. I mean, eventually it's going to happen. And where I am, too, there's a major fault that goes between goes through Charleston and even through part of, I think, a portion of Columbia, South Carolina as well. It comes right through.
You're right. I mean, Charleston is extremely earthquake prone. It's a very dangerous earthquake.
And it's way overdue.
And isn't it, I wonder what a coincidence that might be that the New World Order, we know the global elite trying to create hatred and racial tensions, created that phony Charleston shooting. We all know that. There have been so many false flag shootings that it's a foregone conclusion that this was another one of those false flag shootings. Is that a coincidence that this event happened in Charleston? And is there something else that they're planning? And what about the almost nuclear attack that they played, that they had planned several years ago in Charleston Harbor? I mean, it's just too many things that seems that Charleston seems to be in their crosshairs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's been quite a bit as of late. You know, South Carolina, I think, has been a target for quite some time. I mean, and I bring us back to, you know, them seceding from the Union, you know.
Good point. I was just thinking of that. Fort Sumter, right.
Yeah.
So, the kickoff to the Civil War.
Exactly. So, you know, and here we go. Now the governor here says that we got to make things right and take down the Confederate flag, and I mean, they're really making a big racial issues.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty much, that sort of parallels the attack on Fort Sumter, which was a false flag too, incidentally.
Yeah.
When they claimed that the Confederates attacked Fort Sumter. No, that was a false flag, like all wars. Just like the Spanish-American War was another false flag attack. The U.S., the power elite blew up the battleship, USS Maine battleship, and blamed it on the Spanish to start the Spanish-American War, and so on. You know, every war since then has been a false flag. So that one at Fort Sumter was, too. And, boy, oh, boy, I just hope we don't see a replay of that happening right now.
Yeah, we just might be. I mean, you know, the way they're doing things, I mean, they're making sure there's black on white or white on black crimes, and they're making sure, and you could tell what they're trying to focus, wanting us to focus on, because the mainstream media puts a spotlight on it. You know, there's like drive-by shootings every day where people shoot 8-9 people on their front porch, and you don't hear much about that, right? But they like to pick out these ones. Hey, church. This white kid came in and he shot the. And it turns out now this kid's best friends, people he drank with and hung out with, they're black, and they're coming out and saying that he wasn't racist at all. So
the truth is coming out. That's good news.
Yeah. So now the mainstream media, you know, they got to think of their next. How can we combat that? Because that goes against what the media has been telling us.
You know, I think God always works in ways to expose the liars in these false flag events. I'm so glad to see that eventually all these false flags get exposed.
Yeah.
And people begin, you know, at least the ones who are awake and have discernment, realize that it's all a lie. But you would think after they've been fooled so many times, that so many false flags have occurred that no one would believe it. Like, as soon as the shooting happens, false flag, people would logically realize that it's got to be a false flag attack by the ruling elite who are trying to cause social strife.
See, and once you know, once you wake up and you see it for yourself and your eyes are open, there's, you know, not then you could see these things for what they are. But when you have not yet woken up, and there's a lot of people who haven't, and I've been there, where it's just no way that couldn't be. They wouldn't do that. You know, you just can't. You can't fathom it.
Yeah, they won't. You can't convince them. But it sinks in. You plant the seed, and eventually that seed grows, and they realize the truth begins to blossom in their minds. Well, that's why truth is so close to God. You know, when you know the truth, you're close to God. And the love of the truth and the love of justice are pathways to God.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's see now. So we know about the in time indexing. And I think this thing is pretty close because we can see scientific evidence of this object intruding into our solar system and causing complete Earth disasters every 36 and a half centuries. Now, what's some of the evidence of disasters that we've seen from the past, from ancient incursions? One of them is off the coast of Florida. There's also off the coast of many different places. Incidentally, Edgar Cayce said, one of the other prophecies he said was, many a coastland will become the bottom of the ocean, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's ominous. Very ominous. But we see that now from past incursions of this dwarf star. We see the Bimini Road has been discovered, and decades ago it was discovered. Actually, I have a video of the explorers who went back in the early 1980s. There was a psychic, and speaking of psychics, you know, and prophecy, this was absolutely amazing. I have the video. It's called Ancient Prophecies. I don't know if you could find it anymore, but I put it on DVD, and I've got to put that back up on my Vimeo channel also.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Vimeo channel, which acts as a backup to YouTube. And that is ancient. In this particular video from the early 1980s called The Jupiter Menace. Yeah, The Jupiter Menace. In that, it shows where they discovered there was a psychic. And this psychic's name was Alex Tanous. Alex Tanous, T-A-N-O-U-S. You could look him up, probably. This guy had some tremendous psychic power, and he predicted things, always things that were bad, ominous. The police used him. He was so accurate and phenomenal that the police used him to find missing persons. He would go into a trance, and what he did was they got him these scientists who were studying what they believed was the coming Earth disasters, and relating those Earth disasters based upon what previous Earth disasters. They got Alex Tanous to try to find some ruins from previous disasters that occurred thousands of years ago to prove that we might be on the cusp of another global disaster. Well, Alex Tanis, they said, we want you to find ancient ruins somewhere. So Alex Tanis said, right on this video, he said, he was kind of a weird guy. He said, well, I went to find this missing evidence, and a part of me went under the ocean. That means I went into an out-of-body experience. This is amazing to watch this guy. I want to show you the video. And I went into an out-of-body experience. A part of me went under the ocean, and I found this lost city under the ocean. It was so amazing. There was spiral staircases under the sea made out of marble. There was temples that were so beautiful and amazing. It was just indescribable. And then they show the next scene, the actor George Kennedy, the late George Kennedy, was a famous actor, I guess, from the past. He was a narrator, the host of this documentary, The Jupiter Menace. And he said, a lot of people didn't believe Alex Tanis, and he's on a yacht now, right, going out into the ocean off the coast of Florida. A lot of people didn't believe Alex Tanis until we went to the coordinates where he had told us to go. And we found a 1,000-yard-long wall called the Bimini Road underneath the ocean. Of course, it was encrusted with coral and everything, but when Alex Tanis saw it in his vision, he saw it as pristine and just as it was when it went under thousands of years ago.
That's not very far-fetched because they have now been, I think on a regular basis, discovering structures that were built that are under the ocean. And I tell people, look, they didn't build these things underwater because if they did, they wouldn't have needed stairs on them. They could have floated up to the second stories or third stories. So,
right.
It's off Florida. I know there's some. There's also, in between Florida and Cuba. And off Indonesia, too, I've had Frank Joseph Hoff on. And they've discovered a huge mass of land that used to be above water. And they're getting artifacts from it periodically now.
Wow, what's this guy's name again? I could look up his evidence.
Frank Joseph Hoff.
H-O-O-F?
Yes, H-O-F-F.
Okay, I'll have to remember that name and look up his evidence.
Yeah,
very interesting.
He's been on with, I think he's been on with Art Bell before. He's been on my show several times. He's been on Coast to Coast, so he's been out there.
Indonesia has the plates. There are some tectonic plates out there in Indonesia that are very seriously looking, seem to be a very unstable. And that's a very dangerous place to be. There's so many, getting back to the undersea ruins, there are some undersea ruins off the coast of Japan, too, that I've seen in documentaries, the Science Channel and other channels. I think it's the H2 History Channel. Both of those are very good, but I have recorded a lot of that, showing the underground, undersea ruins of this Japanese city. And all the scientists, of course, and any person, people who have common sense can see that these were built, as you say, above ground, and they sank
into
the ocean.
I was going to say, I don't even know if they sank. It almost seems like the ocean rose, but maybe the earth tilted. And, it's like that old cup of water thing. You tilt the glass, the water shifts,
Yeah, it could be if the ocean rose that much, it would have been worldwide, I would think. And then you would have had a significant disaster. It would have been a global disaster like the Great Flood, for example. But what happens, what happens when these lands go underwater? The ocean used to be very high after the Great Flood, obviously. The whole world was flooded. That was the second previous incursion of Planet X, 5300 BC, according to Pittman, geologists Pittman and Ryan. So the oceans were very high from 5300 BC to 1650 BC when the second incursion occurred. And then the ocean sea levels went down following that, as a result of that 1650 BC incursion of Planet X. So what we're seeing undersea now would, wouldn't think that it would be from a high sea levels, because sea levels are now down, and they used to be high.
Mm-hmm.
From the sinking of Atlantis, 9,000 BC, continents rose and shifted. Some rose, some sank. For example, in terms of prophecy, coming land shifts, Edgar Cayce says that we will see prior to this, and watch for these signs, prior to the great disasters that are coming, prophesied to come soon, and that seem to be scientifically indicated to be coming soon. Some of the first events you'll see is a rising of land coming in the North Atlantic off the coast of New Jersey, or some parts of the North Atlantic, according to Edgar Cayce's prophecies, I believe. I haven't studied them. I should study them more carefully. But I think he says islands will come up. You'll see land masses come up. Now, Gordon Michael Scallion is another prophet, a post-Edgar Cayce prophet. And this guy is on the level. I believe he's legitimate. He's authentic. Because he started out as a technical guy. He was a speaker, and he had a very good job as a technical, an engineer, more or less, and he did public speaking on engineering. Had nothing whatsoever to do with prophecy and no interest in prophecy at all. And again, this was just depicted, his Gordon Michael Scallion's experience was depicted in this Ancient Prophecies documentary from 1995, produced by WABC TV and hosted by David McCallum. But as Gordon Michael Scallion said, I was just a regular guy. I was giving a speech talking about technical stuff and bandwidth and everything. And all of a sudden, I lost my voice in front of this audience, and they thought I was sick. They rushed me to the hospital. I couldn't talk. Got him in the hospital. They found out everything was okay. There was nothing wrong. So he figured, well, what happened? Why did I lose my voice? And then all of a sudden, he started seeing auras around people. He was looking outside at people passing by and near his house, and he would see these blue auras around them. And that's exactly what Edgar Cayce said, who lived, decades before Gordon Michael Scallion. Edgar Cayce would see auras around people. And normally, if a person was is angry, he could see a specific reddish aura. One time, Edgar Cayce, when he was getting on an elevator in New York City, he was waiting for the elevator to go down to the basement, or go down to the first floor, and the elevator door opened, and they said, going down, and he said to himself, wow, I don't see any auras around these people on the elevator. None of them have auras. I mean, everybody I see has auras, but except these people. I'm not getting on that elevator. And what happened was the cable broke. The elevator cable broke, and the people on the elevator all died. So, speaking of prophecy, speaking of auras, and detecting the person, a person's, doomed future, perhaps, Gordon Michael Scallion somehow amazingly took on this this phenomenal psychic ability to see auras on people. And then he began to have dreams. He went into a point where he would have dreams and visions, and some of them would last for a long time. He would go into such it would be so traumatic for his body, so traumatic, that he would have to go to sleep for like several days just to get over it, just to recuperate from these visions. And what he described, Gordon Michael Scallion himself was in this documentary, where he said, around, now the dates are usually wrong, prophets are usually wrong with their dates, they're always too early, but he said from 1998 to 2001, everything is very quiet. The earth is quiet. The animals are quiet. And then, and he doesn't say how much later into the future, and then a great wind came up. It was hurricane force. And I watched and I saw the oceans themselves buckle and land masses were thrust up from the oceans. He said it was horrifying. It took me days to recover from that vision.
And, you know, there's a lot of people who are having visions. I get people who contact me often and tell me about these dreams and these different visions that they're having. And it's so easy to just brush it off as, oh, it's just another dream. But, you know, when you got things happening like they are now, both in space and here on the planet, you know, I start to pay a little more attention to these people. I don't know about you, but I know you do, too.
Yeah, I mean, because when you see so many people saying the same prophecies, for example, I met, well, her name was Pam Stewart. I asked her, I'm so glad I asked her to send me a tape, make a cassette tape describing her visions, her dreams about floods. So many people have had flood tsunami visions and dreams. It's just amazing.
I had a flood dream myself, John, a few years back. It was a strange one. I'd woke up and the house was flooded. Well, it wasn't flooded yet. I opened my bedroom door and then there was the flood. The water poured in. There was I actually seen my kids, two of my kids, face down in the water. It was a scary dream. I woke up, I had cold sweats. It felt very real. There was lions. There was alligators in the water. I mean, it was pretty crazy scene.
And it was so vivid in your mind that it was probably could have been to some degree prophetic about what's about to happen. I was just speaking of dreams. I mean, there was a woman named Cynthia that went on my email list, and she told me about a dream where she envisioned basically the same thing that I did, that the earth was engulfed in lava. She had a dream about that. Well, I said, replied to her telling her that about 6-7 years ago, I was in the middle of the night and I had been asking God, I guess, reading the Bible about the lake of fire, trying to figure out what this lake of fire will be at the very end of the world, when all those who remain resistant and who will not cling to God for survival, because God is saying that he will draw people up away from this destroying earth and save them, but some people will just shake their fist at him, you know, and continue to resist God's beckoning call to save them. Well, those people will then be thrown into what the Bible calls the lake of fire in the book of Revelation. You read about that, but you know that sounded to me symbolic. What kind of physical evidence could there be of a lake of fire that could exist?
Well, that would be lava, maybe, right?
Exactly. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and the answer to my dream came. I think it was from God, because I sat up like as if a rocket had launched me out of bed.
I know that feeling.
I looked at the clock. It was 3:00 in the morning. That's another thing I never thought about. What a coincidence. Exactly 3:00 in the morning. Was that a coincidence or was that meant to be? Well, anyway, I saw in my dream, boy, what woke me up was a dream of watching the entire earth engulfed in this flaming lava. And I said, that's the answer to my question. That's what the lake of fire is. Because after all these people around the world, the Bible prophesies that all those who shake their fist at God and refuse to embrace God in their mind, is the line okay? Or, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Those who refuse will go into the lake of fire. Well, there are going to be people in China. There are going to be people in Paraguay, people in Cuba, people in the United States, all of them going into the lake of fire. There'll be people in Germany, people in Nigeria, Australia, China, whoever, going into the lake of fire. This must be a pretty big lake of fire to fit all those people in from all over the world.
Right? Yeah, I love how you look at it, too. You find a symbolic meaning in all of this, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we do have to take a one last break here, and then I want to come back and finish up with you, and so we'll have probably about 20 minutes to go when you get back, or when we get back. So
okay.
Hang on with me one more time, John, and then we'll be back to finish things up. Folks, my guest is John DiNardo. And I love having John on. He's not selling anything. The only book he refers to is the Bible, not anything he's wrote, what have you. He's speaking straight from his heart and his research. This is really what he believes. And I don't think he's too far off. I don't agree with every single thing, but this is a very smart man we have on here tonight, and a very interesting conversation. Your last chance to be a part of it, if you so choose. 803-317-2264. This is Late Night in the Midlands. I'm Michael Vera, and we'll be back. Folks, honestly, I would love for any of you out there, if you have music you put together yourself that belongs to you, send it to me at mv@latenightinthemidlands.com. And if it's suitable for this show and on air, I will be more than happy to use it. We're looking for more stuff like what I just played. It doesn't have to have lyrics. It could just be some wild, weird kind of strange music. I love that stuff. So if you want to send it to me and send me, you know, tell me who to give credit for it, and I'll do that as often as I possibly can. And my guest tonight is John DiNardo, and we're going to get back with John here in just a moment. The website's www.latenightinthemidlands.com. Please become a member. Be informed. Inform others. Folks, we've got a lot of great shows we do every night, and a lot of work goes into them, and we appreciate you all spending 3 hours with us every night. It makes it all worth it, because it's not just about waking people up. That's not the only goal here. It's also about expanding the mind, and I guess in the long run, that is waking people up, right? So, we're here to do multiple things. I mean, there's people who have been trapped in a box for a long time, and I just pray that somebody will wheel them over to the radio and or the computer, and let them listen to Late Night in the Midlands, and maybe open that mind a little bit. Give them the tools to pick that lock. That's what we want to do here on Late Night in the Midlands. And I think I know we're accomplishing that. I mean, John DiNardo here, great guest. He's been back on this show several times. And, you know, he's never selling anything. He's just telling you what he knows. And you got to respect that. I do. So back to it with my guest, John DiNardo. Again, the call-in number is 803-317-2264. John, we're back, and what I'd like to do is give you the floor to get out anything else that you'd like. And I do want to say that, you know, I love how you, each time you come, you put more pieces to the puzzle. And I appreciate that, and I appreciate that you have an open mind, and that you don't push any ideas on anybody. You're simply giving people the information that you have, and you're allowing them to do with it as they will. And I love that about you. So thank you.
Well, thank you for your hospitality and inviting me, Michael. I really appreciate that. And I consider you a really good friend as a result of all these interviews.
Well, thank you. Feelings mutual.
I'm glad that you're there.
Good. Well, I'm glad that, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for people like yourself who do the research and bring it to the table. So thank you.
You're welcome. Another prophecy that comes to mind that was presented in that wonderful documentary by WABC TV titled Ancient Prophecies, recorded way back in around 1995. Another prophecy that comes to mind is that of a woman, I forget her name, but she was haplessly and unwittingly visited by a spirit who called herself, an Indian woman, who called herself No Eyes, No Eyes. And No Eyes told her, he says, your name is not what you think it is. Your name is Summer Rain, Mary Summer Rain. And she said, you will move to the Southwest, whatever place in the Southwest. And she got her to somehow, her spirit induced her to move. And when she moved, she, No Eyes, showed her prophecy about the end of the world. And she talked about the Great Phoenix. See, Great Phoenix sees to the future and sees the earth in great turmoil. And Great Phoenix sees bodies hit the ground. Bodies going to hit the ground. And immediately I thought of September 11th, 2001. And this prophecy program was recorded in 1995 or 94. So how did Mary Summer Rain, or as told to her by, as prophesied to her by the spirit, No Eyes, how did they know that the bodies would hit the ground, or were referring to September 11th in New York City? That's what I believe they're referring to. And then another prophecy that was given by No Eyes to Mary Summer Rain was that there would be great, the earth would rip open like earthquakes. And then No Eyes said, great storms come. They cover all towns, winter and summer all mixed up. Isn't that exactly what we have and what we have been seeing for the last decade?
It is. Yeah.
Winter and summer all mixed up, great storms of all kinds, windstorms, tornadoes, straight-line windstorms, which we've never seen before, called derechos. Nobody ever heard of the name derecho. It might have been a rare occurrence decades ago once or twice, but now we have derechos, windstorms, covering hundreds of square miles, high-velocity winds. As James McCanney said, he said, we're going to have hurricanes on land, and that's what exactly what's been happening. So all kinds of bizarre weather, hailstones, as, you know, routinely the size of tennis balls, baseballs, and even softballs, deadly hailstones. Winds, haboobs. Nobody's ever heard of a haboob, but now we see them more frequently, which is a huge wall of dust, red dust, sometimes brown dust.
This is
and
happening.
It just goes up into the sky and it covers an entire city.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is happening a lot more. You're right, these dust storms. It's like, you know, I remember growing up, I don't remember seeing this stuff on the news, and we are now.
Exactly. So something's happening with planet Earth that is completely abnormal and bizarre. That's more evidence. But getting away from, you know, in addition to the prophecy, we have other scientific, other evidence that was presented for in the documentary of the early 1980s, that which I referred to before, in the Jupiter Menace videotape. And in that, they showed what many of us know, many scientists are aware of, and that is they found mammoths, these huge woolly mammoths, which are now extinct. They're bigger than elephants. They look like elephants, but they're bigger, and they have large, long tusks, and they're woolly coats on them. They were found frozen solid underneath layers, many, many feet of ice, in Siberia. They were discovered as, you know, as far back as the late 1800s. Now they're discovering more and more of them. What they found when they dissected these mammoths, these woolly mammoths, was tropical vegetation in their mouths and in their stomachs. This is scientifically been proven. It's a well-known fact of biology, ancient archaeology, that these hundreds of these mammoths have been unearthed.
That's true.
They dug up from the ice.
I went to the South Carolina State Museum here, and they had one of these woolly mammoths. I guess it was a decoy or whatever. Wasn't the real deal, but it was, you know, life size, and honestly, those things are huge, and they're just a very big animal, and again, what you're saying is so true. I actually watched some science videos on this, and where they said that, yeah, they found plants, tropical plants in their stomachs, still, even in their mouth, still, you know, it was still
right.
Edible.
Exactly. So there's only one way that could have happened, where tropical vegetation was found in what is now the Arctic tundra, the Arctic Circle, and they still had it in their mouths. I mean, that indicates an instant freeze, a flash freeze. And there's only one way that could happen is if the Earth were to vertically rotate such that the North Pole would shift downward toward the equator, and the North Pole would become closer to the equator, and it would happen in a matter of an hour or so, because those mammoths would have, if they started freezing over any long period of time, the first thing any living thing would do would be to curl up in a ball,
yeah,
and try to get warm. That's what an animal would do. That's what a human being would do if they were slowly frozen. But if they were flash frozen, they would be like statues frozen in their stance. And that's exactly how these mammoths were dug up, frozen, standing up. So what happened was that proves that the Earth actually rotated in space vertically instead of revolving horizontally like it does every day. There's absolute proof there. But
yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah. I was just going to say, you bring up some great points. And, I mean, I don't know how much people, you know, I think what it is with people, John, is that they understand that these things have happened before, but they feel like there's something unique about them that it's not going to happen while they're here. And I think.
Yes, and they call it cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
Some people mispronounce it. They say cognitive dissonance. A dissonance is like noise, but dissidence is like rebellion or disagreement,
mm-hmm.
conflicting, disagreeing with something that you see it happening, but you disagree with it. You don't want to believe it. So they see it happening, but they don't want to believe it because psychologically it scares them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But those people have to come around and say, look, there's a God. If you believe in God, you don't have cognitive dissonance. You trust that the one who loves you and created you and keeps your heart beating and gave you this marvelous gift of love, which is called the human body and the earth and all the beauty around it, that person who loves you is the one who's bringing this destruction, because that being wants you to be with you forever, wants you to be with him forever in a new life. And you cannot have a new life if you don't embrace him. And you can't embrace him until you get scared, like a father who loves his children who are going wrong and going wild. And the only way he can bring them back to him is to take off, get the belt, and start whacking them.
Right, yeah.
And they start getting out of hand.
Yeah,
that's what God's doing. He's whacking us with the big belt. Outer space.
That's it. And I remember getting my butt whacked with the belt when I was a kid. So,
me too. And let me give you this, the soundest evidence yet that
okay.
I've given you all since we started tonight. And that is what I photocopied and put on the internet. It's on Marshall Masters. I send it to Marshall Masters. He has it on his website. And I often send off the link to this actual photograph of the esteemed, famed New York Times article. Now, we know New York Times lies when it comes to political stuff, but stuff that's going to make them look bad, this would make them look bad, because they don't, the elite of the New York Times would not want us to know this. So this, you can believe it's true, because it's something that they would not normally put out. It's not part of the lies, the showcase of lies that you read in the New York Times. Okay, here's the article. I got it right in front of me, and we can see the actual picture of the article. It's not a transcription. It's New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. That's nearly a third of a century ago. Title of this New York Times article, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. That's the title. This was before the National Security Agency got wise enough to say, don't talk about that anymore. This is before they suppressed it. I'm going to read real quickly because we have limited time. I won't give you the whole article. I'll just give you bits and pieces.
Okay.
Quote, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Ah, so they admitted that this was the long-sought Planet X. And they're saying evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting much more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of the mysterious force. You see, when what they did was they sent out the Pioneer spacecraft, and the Pioneer 10 was sent out deliberately to where they had, the scientists and astronomers had calculated this object was. And if they were to send it on a trajectory close enough to this object would be, because of its great, great mass, would exert a noticeable, detectable gravitational pull on this relatively small spacecraft. And thus, the spacecraft would be pulled off of its trajectory slightly. That trajectory data would be transmitted back from distant Pluto, way out of the outer bounds of the solar system. It would be transmitted back by radio waves to Earth, where it would be picked up and collated and analyzed. And indeed, they detected a deviation at that particular point, so they knew where it was. Because if you triangulate the position of the spacecraft and where its several different the deviations from its trajectory had occurred, at what coordinates in space, you could then determine by triangulation where the object was and get an estimation of its mass. And that's exactly what they did, but they did not report it. They did not publicize it. They just kept their mouths shut. And we know that they did indeed detect the object out there by gravitational pull on Pioneer 10, because shortly thereafter, they sent up what's called the infrared astronomical satellite, which is what I'm about to read to you now from that same article. Quote, the infrared astronomical satellite was boosted into a 560-mile-high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the U.S., the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, that object that pulls at Uranus and Neptune. And they, so there you go. There's the evidence right there. And now I'm just going to, because of limited time, I'll show you what Dr. Harrington, who was later murdered, we all know, James McGanney believes it, and many others believe it too, that he was murdered when he was about to tell the public about this object, that his telescopic findings show that it was indeed moving in toward our solar system. That's when they killed him. And never released the findings, his telescopic plates. They were buried, literally or figuratively buried in the news, never revealed. Let me read that. Recent calculations, this is from the latter part of this New York Times article. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory, that's Dr. Harrington, have confirmed the orbital perturbations exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet. He and Dr. Harrington calculate, etc. And further, moving on through toward the end of the article, this is one of the most important phrases that people seem to miss, but it really provides proof that this object is being pulled in by our sun right now as we speak. And here's the quote. It says, this object has a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. Hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the sun. That's a third of a century ago. They declared that this object is within the gravitational influence of the sun. In other words, the sun was pulling it in, albeit a weak force because of its great distance, a weak gravitational pull, but still pulling it in. And as it got closer, the gravitational force of attraction increases exponentially as it gets closer and closer. That it agrees that phenomenon of exponential increase in gravitation as the distance between the object and the sun decreases. That principle is stated in Sir Isaac Newton's universal law of gravitation. So we know that if they declared back in 1983 that it was in the gravitational pull of the sun, then we know it's still within the gravitational pull of the sun now. And it's being pulled in day by day, year by year.
That's right. Well, John, we're just about out of time here. We've got just a couple minutes left. I thank you so much for being a guest here tonight. And if there's anything you'd like to plug or get out there, go right ahead. And thank you. Very, very interesting evening.
Well, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to bring this information to you and your audience, Michael. What can I say? People have to be, get prepared, think of all the things. We'll try to communicate with your audience and other people who are interested in how we can prepare at least before the disasters get really severe, how we can prepare for the floods, prepare for the earthquakes. Well, what is it? Food. I mean, mainly you store food. It doesn't have to be freeze-dried. It could be just canned food and canned white meat, chicken, and canned whatever, anything that's non-perishable that provides nutrition. But the most important item, in addition to your food, is water. We had talked about this last time. I've been saving plastic bottles for years and filling them up with water, and I still have some in my. I've been neglecting to fill up the ones that are laying all over my basement floor, but that's one, and I stack them up too. So that's what you got to do, because water is going to be so vital to survival, water and food. And of course, walk with God in your mind. I know it's not easy, because there are the worldly spirits that we cannot see are trying to distract us with all kinds of wonderful things like baseball and movies and things that we have to do, and so many things that distract our minds. But even while you're doing the mundane things of your life, you struggle and ask God to give you the awareness of His presence. When you have that awareness, you'll be protected. He guarantees that you will be protected from these disasters.
All right. Well, John, thank you again, and God bless you, my friend, and thank you for all you do.
May God bless you, and thanks so much, Michael.
All right. Have a great night. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, everybody. That is John DiNardo, and great guest. He really is. And, you know, I'm looking at our recorder here that's, you know, records the show for later. And his audio is down a little bit, but I hear him clear as day, and he sounds fine to me, so hopefully it's good on the other end. And I think it's about time for Ira and I to get together and do some sound checks. We usually do that once a month at least, and we haven't done it in probably almost a couple months now. So we need to do some sound checks and make sure everything is accordingly, and get everything worked out, and to try to get these some of these things on even balance, but because sometimes they get out of whack. But you know, I enjoyed talking with John tonight. He is somebody who has no agenda. He's just simply giving you the information as he has it, and he's not selling it to you. So I admire that. With that, folks, all I can say as far as Planet X goes is keep your eyes posted to the sky, because you never know what you might see, and keep your ears posted to this broadcast, because you never know what you might learn. So for our station manager and program director, Ira Robinson, our webmaster, Jolene Robinson, all of our chat moderators, and of course, all of you listening around the world, this has been a broadcast of Late Night in the Midlands on the LNM Radio Network, folks, and we'll be back with you tomorrow night right here on the LNM Radio Network. Good night, everybody.